Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Murder in the North. I'm Zach.
And I'm Kelby.
And we hope that everyone's having a good week so far. We are actually filming this the day of release, but we did want to... we did also want to say thank you to a special someone who actually sent us a message over our Instagram. We really appreciated the message, and we just wanted to say thanks.
Yeah, it was a really nice message, and it really brightened our days, and it's nice to know that people look forward to listening to our episodes each week. So I guess without further ado, we'll jump into our case sources. So our case sources this week are a YouTube video, but it's also a podcast by True Crime Brewery, a CBC.ca news article, Wikipedia, and then also a document that's actually from court. I'm not too sure what it's called. I believe it's called like an archive. I'm not sure if that's correct, but all of our sources will be listed in the show notes. Our case this week takes place in Mississauga, Ontario. Our story begins in January 2003 when the Mississauga police get a phone call at around 10:30 p.m. from a frantic young girl stating that she just found her mother deceased in the bathtub. Constable Blair Horner from Peel Regional Police arrived on scene only 3 minutes after this phone call was made and greeted 15 and 16-year-old Sandra and Beth Anderson. The girls informed police that after getting home from a night out with friends, the eldest daughter Sandra found their mother face down in the bathtub and phoned police. Constable Blair Horner proceeded to go into the bathroom to find a deceased woman who was identified as Sandra and Beth's mother, Linda Anderson. Linda's arm was hanging over the edge of the tub, which police noted was an odd position for a drowning to take place, as this position isn't what they would typically see. However, investigators were also unsure if she happened to be sitting upright and fell over, as this could also explain why she was positioned this way. With this being said, there was confusion between police and paramedics, but ultimately her death was labeled an accidental drowning. She was warm and had no pulse. Paramedics would attempt to open up Linda's mouth, but noted it was rigid, which indicated signs of rigor mortis, which usually occurs 4 to 6 hours after death. So this death would have happened to take place approximately 4 to 6 hours earlier.
Okay.
Both Sandra and Beth were visibly upset, like they just lost their mother. The two would tell police that they had gone out to dinner with friends at around 6 p.m. this night and that their mother had given the girls her card to pay for their time out. Both Sandra and Beth would also mention to the investigators that their mother had a history of alcohol abuse and depression. The girls would end up sharing that their mother was a nurse, but started turning to alcohol to the point that she ended up losing her job. And after doing a thorough walkthrough, police found an empty bottle of vodka on the dining room table, which both Sandra and Beth stated was from their mother. Police would take blood from Linda, as this was part of their protocol, but ultimately the death would be ruled an accidental drowning, as I mentioned. Investigators had some suspicion to this death ruling, as death in a bathtub is not typically common, and most people would wake up if their airway was cut off.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're sleeping and all you just kind of feel like you're not breathing, so you just kind of like jump up type of deal.
It's almost like a reflex.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was also noted that the shower curtain was inside the bathtub, where typically if you were to have a bath, that would not be on the inside. It would be on the outside.
Yeah.
But also with Linda being heavily intoxicated, it's not that suspicious because maybe she forgot to pull it out.
Yeah.
And police also wondered if when they were pulling her out of the bathtub, if like maybe it got put in. Mm-hmm. They really didn't know, but they also weren't too concerned about it.
They didn't really kind of take note on it when it was first, like when she was first found.
Exactly. Police noted that Linda's blood alcohol content was 0.415, which is 5 times over the legal limit, and this on its own could have caused death and been fatal.
So, like, we could be running into, like, another boozing barber case here.
Yeah. If you guys don't know what that is, that was one of the episodes that we covered, so.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, Linda could have puked and died of asphyxiation. So, as I mentioned, though, her death was ruled as freshwater drowning, and both Beth and Sandra would be brought down to police station to be questioned. During Sandra's questioning, it was noted that she was quite calm, and the same was noted for Beth. Now, I don't think this is that unusual, as people react differently in traumatic situations. They could have also still been in shock because they just both lost their mother, right? So it's hard to judge from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
During Linda's funeral, both Beth and Sandra could be seen by others joking and laughing with their friends. Both girls had dyed their hair and they were wearing dark clothes. And again, I don't think dyeing your hair or wearing a certain type of clothing really means a whole lot, because people express themselves differently, and I can count how many times I've changed my hair when I've been feeling a certain type of way, you know? However, laughing and joking at your mother's funeral, I did think was pretty disrespectful.
Like, that's pretty weird to think that you're laughing and joking at your own mom's funeral.
Again, I understand everyone copes differently, but this just seemed very unnatural and just inappropriate.
Yeah.
After the death of Linda, both girls would actually move in with their aunt, who was Linda's sister. The girls would live there for a short amount of time until their father would move into the townhouse that they lived in with their mother. The girls move in with their father, but once again move back in with their aunt, as they didn't like how strict their father was. It was mentioned that their father enforced rules surrounding a curfew and was a lot more strict than their mother was before. So that was one of the reasons that they decided to move back in with their aunt. And in March of 2003, their aunt would actually become the girls' legal guardian. So the girls continue living with their aunt, and in January 2004, so almost a year after the death, like the 1 year mark of Linda's death, over 50 police officers enter Sandra and Beth's home, arresting them both for the murder of their mother. The girls will be brought down to the police station, where Sandra would admit to the murder and Beth would deny.
I had a very strong feeling, and I don't know why, but like right off the start, I'm like, I kind of feel like it was the kids. And they just took the card, and yeah.
Now you're probably wondering how we got here, so I'm going to provide more context and do more of like a backstory. So as it was mentioned, Linda drank a lot, and because of this, Sandra and Beth were resentful of their mother. Linda actually had a son named Bobby who had a different father from Sandra and Beth, and because of this, most of the responsibility of Bobby fell onto Sandra, since Linda did not have the capacity to take care of him when she was drinking. Both Sandra and Beth would see their mother in a toxic relationship where Linda's boyfriend was just using her for her body. Linda had high hopes for this relationship, and as we learned, she would cope with her drinking. But unfortunately, this relationship did not work out. Sandra and Beth hated what their mother had become and felt as though they were no longer a priority. They resented their mother because they grew up in a poor area and often compared their living situations to others. They moved a lot, which caused stress for the family. Sandra would often get jealous and be envious of her friends who had pools and nice houses because she wanted that. But she knew with her mother's drinking that this was not possible. The girls were jealous that their friends had nicer clothes, large homes, and that their families were overall financially stable. Basically everything they did not have, they blamed their mother for, which when you're a teenager, it's easy to compare lifestyles, but at the same time, not everyone is as privileged as others. And to be fair, Linda was a single mom, so I think she was doing the best she could with what she could, you know? Both girls had a it's not fair mentality. They thought they deserved the same lifestyle as their friends, which made them resent their mother more. And I will say it's easy to compare, but also it's always different and just better looking on the outside than it is on the inside. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And like, especially like in some cases, like some people growing up with that rougher lifestyle grow up to be sometimes more successful than the people that don't have that.
Yeah. And also, I don't think their mother would intentionally put them through this, you know?
No.
I think she's doing the best she could, but at the end of the day, she was sick.
Yeah.
She was unwell.
Yeah.
And I think that's got forgotten throughout this case.
Yeah.
Every family has their own set of problems, but it is easy to judge other families. Okay, so the girls would actually drink and smoke cannabis themselves, which is also interesting because they didn't like that their mother engaged in that, but they were also doing it. But they did see it as being different because they were doing it for the social aspect.
And that's how it begins.
Exactly. They were skipping school, not doing homework, and their grades went from A's to C's and D's. And partying and doing drugs was their outlet. Sandra would actually call her father to let him know what had been going on at home, and his response was for the girls to call the police if it was unmanageable. Which isn't an ideal answer, especially as a father. And I didn't really like that response, but Sandra would actually called Child Protection Services after Linda's boyfriend smacked her, but the girls did not mention the drinking. Unfortunately, nothing happened, and the girls would call once more about the drinking, And again, nothing was done.
How does nothing get done?
From what I could find, they didn't take it as serious. Like, they didn't believe her almost.
Oh.
Yeah. Linda was a nurse, right? So maybe they thought she, since she's a nurse and like her coworkers had nothing but good things to say about her. I think this was just one that, you know, people fall between cracks, right?
They just thought that overlooked. The daughter was trying to get back at them type of deal.
Yeah. It was mentioned that Linda actually wanted to have another child with her partner, which also made the girls upset considering Linda was not taking care of them or Bobby, which honestly, this made me sad. Again, we see the system failing another family, but also we know, we don't know how bad her drinking was, obviously going off research and what the girls said. They're clearly out of touch with reality, so who really knows what's going on. The girls were upset that their mother was not present and that because of this, a lot of the responsibilities fell onto the girls. And as we heard, the girls wanted the life that their mother was not providing. They wanted the big house with a nice pool and the family that their friends had. Sandra would often get angry as Linda was not working and spent most of her time drinking rather than being at work. And from this, Sandra and Beth made the decision that they were going to kill their mother. In Sandra's eyes, her mother was already drinking herself to death, so she thought she would help speed up the process.
Seriously?
Linda also had a $200,000 life insurance policy, which the girls would be entitled to at 18.
Like, I wonder, like, what goes through your head to be like, you know, she's already kind of doing this to herself. Let's just hit fast forward and speed this up.
Yeah.
Like, what goes through your head to even think that?
So Sandra also thought if they went through with this plot and killed their mother, that they could live with their aunt who would give them an allowance until they were able to get the insurance money at 18. From there, the girls' plans were to drop out of school and travel, and they said that money was not a motive, but rather a bonus, which I'm not too sure if I believe that.
No, it was a motive.
The girls came up with the most ideal situation. They would continue to live in the townhouse and move some friends in to help financially, or they live with their aunt and their cousin had drugs. So they saw it as like an endless supply of drugs. Sandra did not want to take care of Bobby unless Linda was dead, which also was interesting. Sandra would actually convince Beth that this was the only way and like the only option.
Makes no sense. How old were they again?
Beth was 15 and Sandra was 16.
When I was 16 years old, all I was thinking about is how I'm going to play in my next hockey game. I'm not
different situations, but yeah. So Linda would often drive drunk, and Sandra said if they didn't kill her, it would only be a matter of time until their mother got into a car crash with them or Bobby and would kill them. So they very much had the mentality, we have to kill her before she kills us. And it sucks because, as I mentioned, they never considered professional help for their mom. They just thought that the only way to fix the situation was to kill her. Which, it's mind-boggling, honestly. The girls would actually tell some of their friends about their plan to kill their mother. Their friends would actually help them plot how they were going to do it. Both Beth and Sandra also had boyfriends. Beth told her boyfriend, but Sandra didn't until after. This was also super interesting to hear about because their friends must have been very loyal to keep such a big secret.
Seriously, you know? Though.
And like to not tell authorities, but also help them create a plan and hide it.
Yeah, like, how do you simply just help your friend plan the murder of their mother?
Some of them thought at first they were joking until, like, it was very much serious, and we'll kind of get into a little bit more, but it's wild. So, one of Sandra and Beth's friends, we're going to call him Jay, would actually know about the plan to kill Linda, and he'd be caught off guard as he's never seen Linda drink. He never saw her drunk. He said that she was always sober, and he didn't really believe Sandra, but he supported the plan. Their friends would agree to be the girl's alibi and also provided advice on how to get away with the murder. The girls were sure that this was the only way they could fix the situation, so in January of 2003, the girls would make a plan to give their mother as much alcohol as she could take until she became unconscious. The girls would actually drug Linda with 4 Tylenol 3s, and by the end of dinner, Linda had ingested these Tylenols, a few glasses of wine, and a fifth of vodka with lemonade. After their mother became unconscious, they would lay her in the bathtub while wearing gloves and drown her. During the time of the murder, the phone would actually ring and it was one of the girl's friends who was aware of what was taking place. Beth would go answer the phone, and when she returned to the washroom, Linda was dead. Sandra stated that she held her mother under the water for approximately 4 minutes. After this, the girls would take their mother's debit card and meet their friends at Jack Astor's, which is a restaurant in Canada, for dinner for the alibi. And when they would return home, they would frantically call 911 to report their mother deceased. So kind of at the beginning of the story there.
But they probably didn't know that rigor mortis was a thing.
But they also didn't think much of it because they knew that the girls were out for dinner, right?
Yeah.
Sandra would actually tell a friend about the murder of her mother, and at first he didn't believe her. This didn't sit well with the individual, so he would actually go to the police station and inform them of the information that he had.
Good. Finally, someone that's actually thinking logically about
this. That has morals.
Seriously.
So he actually would work alongside police and pick both Sandra and Beth up individually while wearing a wire and having hidden cameras in the car.
That's sweet.
And he got a confession out of both of them in December of
2003. Wow.
So in January of 2004, the two were arrested at their aunt's home. And it was interesting because when they were getting arrested, both girls, I don't think, grasped how serious this was and like how serious of a conviction they were going to get. Because Beth asked police if she could go to school to write an exam. And Sandra informed police that there was a party that they needed to attend.
Oh my God.
So clearly their perception was quite twisted.
Well, and like, I think it was the Boozing Barber case that the guy just thought that he was just, I forget what case it was that we did, that they're just like, oh yeah, I'll be out in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think it was that one too. And the perception, they have like no self-awareness.
Yeah, like you killed somebody.
You're going away. You killed your mom.
You're going away for a long time. You can write, like, you're not going to have to worry about that exam.
Yeah, because you're probably not going to pass high school.
Well, you're going to have to come back to get your GED.
Yeah. So on January 22nd, 2004, the girls appeared in court. Investigators found MSN messages. Do you remember MSN?
Oh, yeah. I remember MSN. The good old MSN days.
Where you could, like, make a status and, like, you could send, like, these like images.
Facebook before Facebook was a thing.
Yeah.
Except it was really only, like, direct messages and stuff like that.
Oh, my gosh.
That just takes me back.
It's, like, nostalgic.
Seriously.
But anyways, so investigators found MSN messages between the girls and their friends plotting the murder of Linda. Emails were also found alongside websites pertaining to murder. There were 14,000 hits on drowning and 247 hits on the word Tylenol. They also found a document on January 14th, 2003, 4 days before Linda's death, on inhalation of water and the drowning process.
14,000 hits.
Yep.
So this isn't just like a month plan.
This is like... In the works.
A long time planning this.
So web searchers also showed information pertaining to mixing alcohol and codeine, which would make sense since they gave her Tylenol 3s as well.
Yeah.
And remember how I mentioned in the beginning that officers took blood as part of their routine or like their process? Mm-hmm. Well, they ended up testing Linda's blood and it showed acetaminophen and codeine in her blood, which is consistent with the medication that the girls gave Linda. So that was just more evidence planted against them.
Yeah.
Their trial lasted 8 weeks, and in April they were let out on house arrest to their aunts. And during this time, the aunt thought that the girls were innocent. But in December of 2005... both girls pled guilty for first-degree murder. And it actually came out in trial that Sandra had actually planned to kill their younger brother, Bobby, as well. And a few of their friends were actually, I think one of them was charged, and a few other ones that were involved, they went with the Crown to, like, plead against them. So they weren't charged.
So because they were helping them out,
yeah,
they weren't either going to see a charge, or if they got charged, it would have been a lesser sentence.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And the reason that I didn't have a lot of the people's names in it is actually because since they're all minors. Under 18, mm-hmm. these are all aliases. This is not their real names.
Oh.
So, yeah. Every name mentioned in this case are not real. You can search the real name, but in all of the research, this was the name. And it was actually created by a journalist, Bob Mitchell. I believe he created a book, but it was just in an effort to protect the girl's identity. Because in Canada, we have what's called the Privacy Young Offenders, which basically means that since, like I said, both the girls were under 18 at the time they were convicted, this act helps to keep their personal information and identity confidential so that they can re-enter society without people knowing who they are.
Yeah.
And yeah, from what I saw and what I've read, you are able to find their names, but I wasn't going to add it. So both girls would serve time in prison. Sandra would serve 9 years and Beth would serve 10. Which was interesting because Sandra was the one that planned the murder and actually did it.
So what, like, do you know why Beth got an extra year?
So from what I saw, she or her father could actually try to get her on house arrest for her last year, but he didn't. Uh-oh. He was like, no, like you can stay there. I don't want you to kill me. So Sandra was released to a halfway house in 2009 and Beth traveled to Ottawa with the intention of pursuing university. So they're released into society, not too sure where they are now.
So if they were 15 and 16 in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I believe they're around 34 now because I was looking at things to post on our Instagram, but because these are aliases, there's not information, but I actually found a video from Global News that I'm going to post.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's Sandra, and she's 34.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is the case on Linda Anderson.
Oh, my goodness.
It's wild, and it's very unfortunate to hear that they thought the only way to help their mother was to kill her.
Yeah, there's way better ways.
Seek professional help.
Seriously.
And actually, I didn't mention this, but also one of the reasons that they got a lesser sentence was because it was brought in court that they actually did reach out for help from Child Protection Services, and they were dismissed.
I see. So would have got more if they didn't do it, if they didn't actually reach out.
Yes. So because they reached out on two separate occasions to CPS and nothing happened, they were like, okay, well, you did try to reach out.
You did something bad, but you also try to get help.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's unfortunate. But yeah, it's...
It's a crazy case.
It really is. And it's so close to home, and the trial happened in Brampton. So.
That's a 45-minute drive down the street. Mm-hmm. It literally takes one street to get to Brampton.
And it's so interesting now because they're just living in society, right?
Yeah.
You don't know where they are.
You just don't know.
But with that being said, that is our case this week. If you want to get more information on the cases we've covered or get behind the scenes, you can follow our Instagram and our TikTok at Murder in the North Podcast.
I swear we're going to start actually posting to our TikTok soon.
It's difficult because Zach and I have opposite work schedules. So I work in the evenings and he works in the day, and now he's getting a new job. So we have to try to figure out a better schedule to film and everything. But just know we genuinely appreciate everyone taking time out of their day to listen. If you have a case you want us to cover, we do have a case suggestion linked on our Instagram bio. Again, that is at Murder in the North Podcast. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening. We apologize if you hear our dog in the background snoring, walking.
One day we'll have a better setup.
Yeah, not a room. But yeah, thanks again so much, guys. We hope you have a great week. We'll see you Tuesday and stay safe.